Hello, everybody, and welcome back to yet another Science Studio. This is Keith Pannell, and today we're going to be talking about science. We're going to be talking about chemistry, but we're looking at a bigger picture, not a particular little topic, not a dusty corner of the periodic table like germanium, tin, and lead, my favorites. But we're going to be talking to the next president of the American Chemical Society. And let me put that into perspective. The American Chemical Society has got about 200,000, I'll say, members, and that'll be corrected later on, I'm sure, and therefore is the biggest scientific organization or academy, if you like, in the world. And a large number of those, of course, are in America, and a large number are abroad, all over the world. So it's got a reach. And so the president of this society has the potential to have a lot of influence on various social topics associated with science. So who's going to talk about this? Well, we've had him on the program once before when he ran as a candidate. It was about 3 or 4 years ago. His name is Dr. Luis Echegoyen. He's actually on the faculty at the University of Texas here in El Paso. And Luis, welcome back to Science Studio, now as the president, not the candidate.
Thank you very much for having me back, Keith. I guess my official title is president-elect.
Okay.
I have been president-elect since the beginning of this year, since January 1.
So you're used to it now. You've had 8 months almost of being president-elect.
As used as you will get. Let me put it that way. It's a lot of work.
I can believe it. I've known several other presidents. And in my humble way, I was president of the Texas Academy of Science, and that had enough work just for a tiny little organization. Okay, so before we get into, you know, what you're going to do as the president, why you ran, what are the big issues that I think the general public should be sort of apprised about, let's go back to Luis as a little boy. Where did you grow up, and did you ever think when you were a little kid that you were going to be a chemist?
I'm one of those who, from early age, I knew that science was one of the main things that I was interested in. I wasn't obviously completely married to the idea that I was going to be a chemist or a physicist or this. But
you probably didn't know the distinction very early on.
Right. But since you asked where did I grow up, I was born in Cuba, and I grew up until I was 10 years old. That's when 1960, you may remember the date, January 1, 1959. That's when Castro took over. It took my father a year and a half to get out of there. But we were some of the first people to leave because things were not very defined as communist.
So you would have been classified as upper middle class because it tended to be people that had resources that saw them threatened that would be leaving.
Yes. Yeah, my father was a TV comedian. He was the most famous comedian on both radio initially and then in TV. I have pictures of him with Bob Hope and with people like that who used to go and visit Havana. He was a very, very handsomely rewarded for his work. So I was very high middle class, if not even higher than that, when I
just
was
out of jokes. That's lovely.
Just out of,
yes. I mean, and he didn't have a reputation that was solid enough to be able to poke holes in a new political regime that he really didn't agree to.
No.
That wasn't on.
In those days, actually, there was a very interesting transformation. My father was the biggest fanatic of Castro because Castro was going to get Cuba rid of Batista and so on, right? Which was a very, very worthy cause, no question about it. And he came in like the big savior, right? So he was going to be the guy who was going to change Cuba in the right way and so on. So my father used to sit at the TV station. I don't know if you're familiar with the fact that Castro used to give speeches that lasted 4 and 5 hours and so on.
Right.
My father would be sitting on the floor, sitting throughout his 4 hours of speeches just because he was mesmerized with Castro, who was a fantastic speaker, fantastic. It was not until the agrarian reform came into place that my father started saying, this sounds a little bit too socialized and too socialist. Not necessarily communism, but I think he was, even at that time, thinking about this may just degenerate into something that is not going to be good. Funny, when we left, my father bought round-trip tickets. He was convinced that the U.S. would intervene and that we would be back. He never did. So we still have the return tickets.
I'd like to see those. Sure. I mean, that's worth putting them on the internet somewhere, just to, the optimism of a comedian, of course.
Yes, he was convinced. So he left our house and so on. He left some relatives in charge of. He was absolutely convinced that this was just a matter of a year or so. But anyway, that's history. So yeah.
Wait a minute. Yeah, what happened to that house? I mean, it was a succession of relatives, or they all left?
Yeah, they left. Everyone left except for one aunt, and she had another house, so she never took over this house. Okay. So it now belongs. It's in private hands now. It went to the government for a while. Now it's in private hands. I have actually visited them.
And indeed, what one sees from a distance is that Cuba is sort of moving much more back into private enterprise of a small, but it's a step, and it's an irrevocable step.
Yes. And the people who I have actually visited the house twice. The first time was actually very interesting because when the house was built in 1955, I guess, or 56, when they poured the concrete for the garage. My father, he was one of these kind of nutcases, very sublime artist, really. But he had a vision, a very, very visionary. And so he requested one corner to be left fresh for his handprint, my brother's and mine. So I went there looking for the handprints. And they were still there, by the way.
Lovely.
But I was looking at the people who live in the house. They looked out and said, what the heck is this guy doing? Right. So I said, sorry, I don't mean to. And said, come right in. And they invited me to visit the house. And they gave me coffee and so on.
Wonderful.
So it was very pleasant.
So an interesting background. And you obviously got reasonably good grounding in early science and math. Mm-hmm. Even up to the age of 10.
Yes.
And then you went to Puerto Rico, as I understand
That's
it,
correct.
Right?
Yeah, we moved directly. We never stayed in the U.S. because my father's English was very poor. So he was supposed to have a job in Puerto Rico lined up.
All right, so lovely.
He did. He became, interestingly, which shows what happened to many Cubans, and I guess happens to many people. When you're good at something, it doesn't matter where you are. You become equally famous or wherever you go. People who were millionaires in Cuba left with nothing, and a year later they were millionaires in Miami. Right?
I mean, you see it in our own game of chemical research. You know, in a sense, you know, once you apprise what the facilities are, now I'm going straight into this sort of science. When you see what the facilities are in a laboratory or an environment, a department, you know. The clever ones, the bright ones, the imaginative ones can do anything there.
Yes.
You just begin to say, well, this is what I'd like to do. But by God, we don't have this, this, and this, but we do have something like this. And the game begins.
Yes.
You know, it's just the inquisitiveness.
The creativity has no parallel and no substitute. In Puerto Rico, since you mentioned Puerto Rico, I went there when I was 10, and I went through all my formative years, schooling as well as a BS degree in chemistry, which I finished in 3 years, and then my PhD I did there as well in another 3 years. Did we have all the instrumentation in the world? Not even close, right? But
I remember visiting in the mid-70s. I mean, you may not have even... You may have been a student, in fact, when I first
I graduated PhD 74.
Okay, so I mean, probably I came after that. But you're right. I mean, first of all, there was no air conditioning, right? I mean, certain rooms maybe had it, you know. Which reminded me very much of Hawaii, because I went to Hawaii about 10 years later for a sabbatical. And the same thing there.
Yep.
And yet people can do creative things.
Yes.
Okay.
I will say this in really not to sound... I don't want to boast or be arrogant, but my advisor was a very creative individual. So he had the right ideas. He had one old EPR spectrometer, and he figured what he was going to do. And by the time I finished my PhD in 3 years, I had published 9 articles, 3 in the Journal of the American Chemical Society and 6 in the Journal of Physical Chemistry. So that gives you an idea.
All on EPR.
All on EPR. Yeah, that's
right. I mean, that story is reminiscent of one of our colleagues, Michael Eastman. He came here in 70, just before I did, and he had an old EPR with a wonderful magnet, though. The console was terrible, but the magnet was wonderful. And he had this little rubber hammer that he'd have to be delicately tapping in different parts of the console for it to sort of catch on fire and get good data. And it was wonderful to watch him. Okay, so you're creative, you've been successful, and now towards the middle of the end of a career, you're going to be the president of this ACS, the American Chemical Society. And I admired you because you ran three times. You were beaten by interesting people. Well, beaten. You were outvoted by other interesting people twice. And yet you persisted. And this is a story I like to tell people. You know, just because you lose something once, you know, come back. Hit at it again. Because if you've got the right ideas, people will sort of come around and say, well, this actually is what we need. So what was it that you told us this time that we need from you in the ACS?
Yeah, well, I think creativity is important, but I think tenacity is equally important. Right? You have to hang on to whatever it is that you want to do. The truth is the ACS comes to you. There is a committee called Nominations and Elections, and they are the ones who decide who are the people that they would like to see run.
Sounds like Stalin and sounds like Putin. I mean, it's
But I'll be honest with you. When they came the third time around, this committee, and said, would you run again? The initial response was, no, nah, I've been there, and I don't really want to go through the process. They insisted, and I talked to some people, and they said, especially Fraser Stoddart, who you know, Nobel laureate from 2016, who is a very, very good friend. I said, what do you think about this? You have to do it because of chemistry and so on and so forth. So he persuaded me to run again.
Right. And let me just interject here, because you didn't come to this as a neophyte. I mean, apart from being an academic, publishing papers and the like, you had spent 3 or 4 years, I don't exactly remember how many, at the National Science Foundation in D.C. as a senior member of the staff, specializing in chemistry, but allocating all the wonderful funds that the federal government gives you. And so you have that much clearer administrative and big picture idea than some.
And it's funny and interesting because as an assistant professor, and even when I became an associate professor in Miami, I was a typical assistant professor dedicated to science and nothing else. And I would even get upset when people suggested that I should become chair of a department or run any administrative position. I think you're one of those who has stuck to your guns from the beginning. I didn't. At one point in my career, they came from Clemson and they said, well, do you want to be chair? And I said, why not? And it's a way for you to do things that transcend just your own science in the laboratory.
That's right. And gets you out of that dusty corner of the periodic table.
And the impact is fantastic. I feel very proud of the 4 years that I was division director for chemistry. I got extra money for chemistry. I did all kinds of things for the chemistry community. I feel extremely, extremely happy that I did it and very proud of the things that
That's
we accomplished.
Good. We'll take a break here. You're listening to Science Studio, Keith Pannell, Professor Luis Echegoyen, President-elect of the American Chemical Society. And when we come back, we'll talk about what Luis Echegoyen is going to do or attempt to do in his presidency. We'll be back in one moment.